Welcome to Expedition Self on OM Times Radio with lifelong learner, entrepreneur, and creator of the worlds of Expedition Self, Sam Parado. Sam shares 4 decades of studying, guiding, and teaching how to go inside so we can build an incredibly powerful, dynamic, and validating relationship with the self. Expedition Self is laced with stellar, unexpected insights about what it means to be human. Listen now and ignite your self-development process with Sam Parado.
Well, hello and welcome to Expedition Self. I'm so glad you're here this evening. I am Sam Parado, and tonight we have a special guest who is here to participate in our series called Chat About Growthwork, Consciousness, and Transformation. And our guest, his name is Scott. And I just have to say, we've tried to make it so that Scott could come. Hold on, Scott, I'm going to do a little promo before you say hello. But anyway, we've tried a couple times to get him on the show. And tonight, I'm so excited because we pulled it off. Like, all of the pieces of the universe came together, and we actually have him live. And so I just want to say, Scott is a dad of 5. He's a renowned environmental scientist and an author. And he's an amazing person. And what I really want for all of you tonight is to get to know who he is and what he's been challenged by in life and how he has come to be who he is. You know, he's one of the most special people I know. And although I do feel like everyone has value simply because they breathe, Scott is particularly special to me because he so exemplifies what it means to be genuine and willing to speak into conversations that are not. And he registers in it, and it matters to him. And I feel like he just had this innate, he was born with this sense of, hey, this is real or this is not. And he is so true to his profound and wise sense of humanness. He just has this feel for what serves the all in any given situation. And he's modeled this for me in knowing him. He's worked with a client that I've had for years and years in any situation. And of course, I've grown because I've gotten to know you. So let me introduce you to Scott. Hello and welcome. There it is.
Wow,
there's your intro.
That was so nice, Sam. Thank you. You almost got me all teary right out of the gate. So I credit your magic wand from the last episode for making this happen. So that cracked me up. And that, I think that was kind of a perfect segue. I think it was kind of natural because after the trapped and confused topic, it really resonates with me too. So I adore you, and you've helped me so much, and I'm glad to be able to be on today.
Wow. All right. Well, so you like the wand. Can I just stop? Should I keep doing it like at every show? Like, I wonder, should I do it at the beginning and the end? What do you think?
Well, I don't know if you need to be doing it the whole time, but it did it did crack me up. I appreciated it. So
I'm trying to figure out how to find somebody who will make me custom wands now that have like a better, like the long part, the wood part, that also can put the little light in it. So I'm on a hunt for someone to create that because I just think they're the coolest thing. So
yeah, everything's better with a little magic, right?
Yes, 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 for sure. So actually, as we get started, I wondered if you could just maybe just start at the beginning about when do you think the whole idea of being conscious, like, you know, crossed your what do you want to call it? what's on the car? What's on the front of the car? The thing you look through?
Your windshield? Or
Yes, that's what I was trying to say. I all of a sudden had a blank. When do you think this idea of being conscious in life crossed your windshield?
That's an interesting question. I don't think I could really put words to that until I started working with you. But I think that I noticed when I was a kid, when I felt like I was being managed by either one of my parents or another adult, You know, things that come up where people don't want to talk to you about what really is going on. Like one of the first examples that I really remember is when my childhood dog passed away, and how your parents talk to you in the lead up and how they're going to explain that to you. And it's like, well, let's go out and have some pizza. And, you know, the way the languaging was set up was in a way that was trying to ease me into something, which made me really on guard. And I think that kind of having those experiences as a kid, I would always notice that people were backpedaling or trying to soften things or trying to manage me instead of expressing what was really going on at first. And I think that kind of, I was always a little bit nervous when I felt that from an adult.
Wow. Gosh, you've just actually said so much, because what you're describing is that you registered when somebody wasn't putting their own vulnerability out, right? When they were using strategy to relate to you. And I can't even imagine. So in my case, in my growing up, that would not have been an area where I was so conscious. What I would find just was I couldn't figure out why what I was feeling and thinking didn't seem to be coming out of the mouths of people around me. And so it's a very interesting piece that you share, which is almost like you really did have a radar early on about whether people were being straight with you.
And I think it's kind of part of how my brain works is that, and that's partly why I'm drawn to being a scientist, is that I kind of am fond of and look for patterns. So I try to find them in nature or landscapes, and I notice them in people. And I think in how people talk and how people are communicating, even when it's non-verbally. So like the body language changes and things, like I just would notice that. Part of it was honestly probably to avoid talking myself. and I think that was kind of all subconscious and just kind of part of how I'm programmed. I think I would have always noticed it, but I wouldn't have been able to talk about it really until I focused on languaging around that and picking up when I'm doing it, because it's a kind of a pattern that you would emulate managing staff in a workplace or being a parent, where you're not sure how to handle how you're feeling about something, and then you need to explain it to someone hoping that they will take it in a certain way. So, you know, I don't think that I really would have had that ability without really working on it a lot. And I think managing like yourself and your thoughts is something that completely plays into the episode last week about being trapped. So I definitely related to that and kind of could see things in my own life after listening to your episode last week too, where like, oh, wow, I'm really falling into those patterns that I wasn't seeing either.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, you're mentioning last week's show. I was pretty riled up last week because I don't know. I feel like I've just personally rounded this corner of understanding that I have just been so participating in stuff for so long that really doesn't provide the freedom, you know, for me. But I do want to say, and I want everyone to actually hear this, is that in my work, right, I work in businesses, and that's where I got to meet Scott. And what he just described to you actually upped my game. Because what would happen is when I would do the thing that he's describing, right, where I wouldn't just come straight through in the middle of something, you know, he'd cock his eyebrow a little bit or look at me a little to the sideways. And I'm saying this to you, Scott, I have been so very grateful for that sixth sense that you have, and also the gentle way that you kind of let me know, hey, I don't think you're being quite real with me. And so I feel like it's one of your your secret sauces or your special thing that you do. And so the idea that you've been a student of it for so long makes sense to me, right? Of it coming at you and then seeing it in yourself, right? And then how that plays out.
Yeah. And I kind of was just thinking about how you're saying it was complicated and multi-layered and how we're feeling trapped. It's kind of the same thing for that, because it's often in some of the more difficult conversations and difficult moments in your life where you're not really secure in how to communicate, that comes out. So I think that, you know, having, you know, as a child, I think you have a tendency to be distrusting and maybe even a little resentful of feeling like you're talked down to or treated with kid gloves, so to speak. But then once you have to give one of those conversations, you see how much of a struggle it is to find your words and then really be able to talk to someone and have them hear you in such a vulnerable moment.
Yeah, I hear you. It makes a lot of sense as you're saying it. I have to say, I found myself thinking about you blending two families and how much that you would have been working that as you went through that. Can you just talk a little bit about what that was like when you took on blending, you know, two sets of children, and what you saw inside of the way vulnerability was helpful or not helpful in that?
Yeah, I mean, I believe being a step parent is one of the hardest things that people can do, and it's also incredibly rewarding. But you know, I've gone in with the expectation that, you know, I'm pretty thoughtful and I'm nice. I'll be able to see how things go and really be whatever is needed to be as a step parent. And the rejection that you get, you know, at first things are kind of nice because you're like an adult and an authority figure to kids. And this has been 10 years ago. Our oldest now is getting ready to go to college in a week. So that's pretty exciting. But you know, once it becomes real that you're kind of in a parental role and you're in a position that is very hard to comprehend with their other biological parent also there in their lives, they can't process that. You know, I was told by a psychologist that kids of divorced parents, they just always at some level want or think their parents will get back together. It's just kind of embedded in you as a kid. And so you're getting rejected. You can't really, it's not like being a parent where things can be natural and you can, you know, the act of affection is kind of welcomed and easy. It's just not the same. And so there's just so much rejection involved. And you like, I wouldn't have thought that that would have been so difficult to overcome. But when you're desperately wanting someone to be you as caring for them and they don't, even if it's a kid, every day, there's just such a risk of becoming resentful. And I think for me, and this is something we talked about a lot, is just you just have to reset yourself and allow that person to be in that spot and just know that's, you're just resetting every day and you're showing up and you're being present and you're being thoughtful and you're, you know, not being another parent. You're being there as a support to their parent, and you just love them. And it's a conscious choice that you have to make every day.
Well, you know,
it's hard.
It sounds super hard, and it makes me think about what I think of the word self-leadership, which is where you are coming from what is important to you without regard for the idea of if you don't get it back, you're not going to do it. Like when you say I have to reset every day because I'm my efforts at some level are being rejected, and it's not even personal, but it still is output is what I hear you saying, like just constant loving and opening your heart and loving and opening your heart in the face of not necessarily getting anything back.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that there's animosity. I think I've built really great relationships, and I do, you know, I consider them all my kids. I love them all. But I think it's you don't get the same return, and you can't expect it. And I think that is something, honestly, really, that you helped me see, is that the act of giving is important enough. Like the expectation of something in return is unfair.
Hmm. Can you say that again? The act of giving. Can you say that again? It's a great phrase.
I'm not sure if I can repeat it, but it's like it's kind of like the act of giving is kind of its own reward, and that generosity is fulfilling, even if there's no response.
Now, do you think that's part of the self-development training for yourself is to realize you're not doing it for them? The act of giving is actually being done for you?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I hope that I have had a positive and kind of guiding in some way influence over the kids, especially all of them. But I think that, you know, that everyone has their own path. I do kind of believe in the whole nature versus nurture argument is a hard one, and I can see both sides of it. I think people should feel loved, and I want them to feel loved, and I don't want that to have any sort of, I'm looking for a word that I lost, but it's unconditional.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's like ties, so, like attachment, like like the idea that there's some obligatory experience that goes with the love.
Yeah. And honestly, I won't speak for my wife, but I think it's much harder to be a stepmom than a stepfather, because being a mom, you're the first point of affection a lot of times. That's been my experience. Like even in my life, I would run to my mom if I was injured. Mm-hmm. My kids look to my mom for the, you know, reassurance and hug. So you get a little bit of a time to adjust. Like you're not the source of constant affection. And to do that, to be that, as a stepmom when the kid isn't sure if they should. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. Like I just think that's, so it can really be kind of frustrating.
You really watched, actually, it's interesting in the conversation that we were talking about you, but you actually brought in the experience that your wife would have also had with your children because she was in the mm-hmm. role of stepmother.
Yeah. I think that is really difficult. And, you know, everyone has to find their way of how they're contributing to their family, and everyone has different dials of what they provide, if they're more instructional or if they're more affectionate or things like that. I think there's a spectrum of parenting, and when you're blending, you know, particularly kids who are, you know, 5 to 10 years old, they already kind of have established connections on the affection standpoint. So they're not able to articulate it as well. They probably wouldn't be as mean and vocal as a teenager would. but there's still like a level of distrust and kind of anxiety over your presence that's kind of hard to overcome. So I just think being present to that, being aware of that, being empathetic to that, and then finding the way not to have an expectation and to bring yourself to them unconditionally is what I really learned.
Yeah. Wow, what a journey. You know, I think we can tell as you talk about it that one of the things I notice about when we go inside and we really take time in there, you find that you start sorting out in smaller increments with the human experience, right? It's not just some generalized statement of, oh, yeah, it was rough. It starts having the kind of description that you just talked about, like you've really lived it and thought about it and paid attention to it. And of course, that's what, at the end of the day, that's what consciousness is that we don't just zone out and numb out, you know? I want to just, before we go on break, can you just talk a little bit about how you would define how you know when your heart is open? I'm just curious about what words you would put on that.
I think my mind moves slower when my heart is open. You know, being kind of an analytical person, I'm pretty critical, and I'm especially critical of myself, trying to find ways to improve. You know, as someone who works on design projects and conservation projects, there's often a problem to solve. So that part of your brain becomes active at noting, cataloging all the problems. And I think for me, when I am just present and kind of experiencing what's going on with whoever I'm with in kind of a softer, slower way, without thought, without judgment, and, you know, smile comes easier. It's those moments when I feel like my heart is open, and I definitely struggle in the morning. So it's one of those things where being on demand at all times is not easy to do. And having, you know, I definitely notice that throughout the day that, you know, whatever energy traps there might be, like you talked about, they will cause me to close. So if I'm feeling like any sort of melancholy, then I'm not likely to be as open.
Very interesting. Well, so how does, and we're going to go on break here in just a few minutes, but maybe you can just set this up a little bit, that you, you know, work in the environment, you love the water, and you love fly fishing. And so maybe you could just take 2 or 3 minutes to talk about your early experiences with fly fishing. And then when we come back, we'll get into like the role that that's played in your growth work.
Sure. Yeah, I know. It wasn't something that I necessarily did as a child. I did spend a lot of time outside. I lived near a big park where I could go and explore. And I always liked being outside. I always liked streams. And it was probably in the last 6 or 7 years where I really liked fly fishing. And I think part of that is as I was kind of advancing in my career and becoming less and less in the field, I kind of missed my time in nature. And also kind of getting a little further away from my artistic self. So there's elements of fly fishing where you tie your own flies with materials, which is really kind of soothing for me. I try to do it every day or so. And then my brain, like I said, I can be pretty critical. It moves pretty fast sometimes, and I can kind of get stuck in loops, the whole analysis by paralysis thing. And fly fishing requires an intense level of concentration on making sure there's like a rhythm to the casting, which is kind of nice. So your body's involved, and then you're watching your fly or the indicator or whatever it might be. So you have to concentrate, because particularly trout, they'll be very quick with biting and then rejecting and spitting it out. So you kind of have to watch it constantly. And that constant attention really is helpful for my mind. Like, it just clears me. So I'm seeing the water, I'm feeling the air, I'm smelling the flowers of the rhododendron and the shrubs next to me and things like that. So it causes me to really be present and to observe and to, like, use my senses and not just be stuck in my head. So mm-hmm. I think it's like therapy, mm-hmm. in a way for me.
Well, what you're describing is, this idea that you're so present, right? You're really in the moment. You're not somewhere else in your head. You're not thinking about the future. Like, everything about it is just being so one with that experience, right, that you're talking about. And mm-hmm. that is really the human challenge, right, is how to be able to be so present in a moment that we're really all there, right?
Yeah, it's very good training for that. And when you stop, that's normally when you get tangled, so, or you have some other issue, or you hook yourself. So it has ways of reminding you when you're not present.
You know, I have to say, the idea that when you're not present, you actually get hooked, I think that would be such a cool thing that we just all had throughout our day, right? Because I think it must hurt. Does it hurt when you get hooked?
Well, yeah. I mean, generally, I will use barbless flies a lot, so they don't have the little edge on it to keep it from coming back out. So that makes it much easier and much less painful. So for yourself and hopefully for the fish. So
for the fish. Well, actually, just before we go on break, I would want to make that point, is that when you fish to put the fish back in. It's really a relationship you're developing with that particular fish that you're looking to, I'm going to use my words, seduce and catch. But that the whole idea is that the fish gets to go on with its life, and then it doesn't, end up, not swimming, right?
Yeah,
I practice. Really important.
Yeah, I practice. It's called catch and release. It's kind of controversial. There's points different ways about it. But yeah, that is what I do 99% of the time.
Yeah. Again, your heart, right? Your heart's on the line, even with the fish. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how Scott connected his fly fishing with his process and his creative expression.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
If I could be you,
and you could be me, for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Right, we are back. I'm Sam Perato, and I am just so pleased I get to have Scott as my guest this evening. And he's sharing a lot about what somebody, a stepfather, and what a person who wants to be conscious, who wants to have an open heart, like what that's like for him. And so I'm just so pleased you're here, Scott. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, it's an experience, right? To like be sitting here and and actually be on the radio and know that people are listening to us. It's wild, right?
Yeah, it's very cool. So I'm definitely nervous. So,
well, I'm that's a present thing, right? That we feel a little jittery about it all. And I'm with you. I'm with you for sure. So I'm interested in if you could now start to make the connection of finding fly fishing, what was happening in your life, and then finding writing and how that had something to do with your inner growth work and where you were really on the your life path. I know that's a loaded thing, which means you can kind of go anywhere, but I feel like if we just kind of lay the groundwork, it's going to open up all kinds of interesting little paths for us.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of layers to that for sure for me. I think that I've run in, and not to kind of keep going back to it, but the whole trap thing keeps coming back in my head. I felt at different points in my life, you know, some of it is due just to feeling a very high level of responsibility, like making sure that I can do my part to get our kids through college and out as productive adults, and making sure, you know, I have a level of income and I keep improving and keep, you know, that type of thing kind of gets a little heavy for me sometimes, where again, when I can be so self-critical, I'll have moments where I am really down on myself, and I don't, you know, I don't know if I fall into a depression, but I definitely go into places where it's hard for me to find motivation at the same level as I felt like I've had before, and then I kind of can spiral. So I've run into the moments like that kind of continually throughout my life. And what I've found is, and part of this is through coaching, is when you write it out, things that kind of spiral in your head that you repeat over and over again, where you kind of beat yourself up, they have a place to go, and they kind of get away, and they kind of ease up that voice in my head. And sometimes I write things down and I'm like, wow, that is not true. That is really silly. but I've been repeating it to myself for a week about how I'm not enough, you know, or I don't fit in. And, you know, and the ability to write, I think, out what you're thinking and feeling is really, really helpful. And it's kind of makes the lies really evident. You know, the things that you tell yourself that are not true, that are limiting you, when you see them, they become a little more ridiculous. So I think that was part of it. And then with the fly fishing, when I would be so present and focused, the power of observation causes you to see everything and appreciate it more. So almost like in an act of gratitude, or like the practice of gratitude journaling or something like that, I find that through writing down the experiences that I'm enjoying and connecting those moments to how I am feeling in my life, it just really opens me up and helps me out. Mm-hmm. So,
well, can I just
that's kind of how it started.
Well, mm-hmm. I want to just comment on that. See, I think there are some people who going inside is like having to discover all these thoughts or discover all these feelings, right? That they've compartmentalized a lot, or they've blocked layer after layer so that's less accessible. Where what you're describing is that you have so much that goes on inside of you, that it actually, by writing, it helps to like see it for what it is and to sort it out, and so that you get to see, oh, that's not really true. I think all these things about myself, and I'm giving myself a hard time on the inside. And then you see it on the paper, and it kind of helps to shake that off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's interesting. And then the idea that then you wanted to write about your fly fishing or capture it or really acknowledge, right, that you've seen something or you've noticed something, in some ways you gave nature what you were giving yourself, which is a willingness to acknowledge, I see you. And I think being seen is just such a huge part of our lives. So when you were referring to being trapped, what you're describing is the untrapping, really, that it sounds like you found on that paper.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was really a great way to say it. I'm realizing as I'm listening to you too that, you know, one of the things I really like socially, in larger groups, I kind of hide, and I struggle, and I'm not good at small talk. I'm not good at kind of like trivial conversation, and it can be uncomfortable for me. And honestly, it probably can be uncomfortable for other people because I ask questions that people may not want to talk about, you know,
right,
in different settings.
To go deeper.
Yeah. So I feel like by writing sometimes and, you know, having a weekly blog, it's my way of trying to have that conversation without it being putting people on the spot, being uncomfortable. It just kind of allows me to say some of those things that I can't always say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you taking care of your own need to be deep and connected to yourself, right?
Yeah.
In some mm-hmm. ways, right? So now how many weeks have you done your blog? Because I just think when we talk about, I do shows, a lot of them, right, about some form of creativity and how we have to bridge these places within ourselves with a, I don't know what I want to say, an outlet or a way to actually experience this unknown or the imagination in the middle. And so how many weeks have you been writing your blog?
I started in January of 2020, and I've written one a week. Last week is the first one that I kind of skipped. I kind of gave myself the ability to take a break. But I think I've written 185 since January of 2020. So and in that time, I also wrote the book. And in that period of time, there was, I think, 225 straight days where I wrote every day except for Christmas. I took off Christmas. And every other day I wrote for that when I wrote my book, just wrote it in a row. So that practice, I'm going to try to write another book here starting in October. So I think that was also really helpful, just the kind of practice and having those habits. You know, you can get sucked into like watching television too much or your phone or other things. And I think writing just kind of keeps me moving, keeps my brain thinking and creating. And, it's just so nice to have that to be productive and create art. I appreciate that part.
Well, so do you, ever use your writing to actually go into the, like, I guess this is what you're really saying. Oh, I'm feeling really frustrated about this. Like, do you ever do it as like straight journaling, or are you always writing more inside of what would be in the blog or what happened when you were fly fishing?
I've gotten in the practice. It's relatively irregular where I will write a letter. Either to myself or to someone else as my journaling, that I never publish and often I delete.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'll use those pieces, certain things like that, that I did. There's pieces of that I put into my book. That I'll do, but I don't journal every day. I think that would probably be a good practice to get into.
Well,
especially on the gratitude side.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because you like those practices. I mean, you know, I think this is where you and I do this very differently. Like, I write, you know, for 3 weeks and then I don't want to write for another 2 months. And which is why you have gotten your books out and I have not. But the habits for you actually provide security and comfort and some kind of a base, I feel like, in terms of even your growth work, like that when you have a habit, you actually stay in the process of paying attention to yourself more in the everyday. Would you say that's true, Scott?
Definitely. I think for someone who really kind of strives to be creative, I really need some foundation or structure, because I will get on myself so easily. I still haven't worked out why I do that. Criticize how I am as a father, as a husband, as an employee, as a manager. I will get on myself really quickly. But when I'm in a habit that keeps me from kind of ruminating and just gets me in a space where I'm kind of using my brain to build instead of tear down, I think when I have a habit, I build, and when I don't, I tear down.
That's interesting. My head went to, you know, in the Enneagram, you know, you being a four, if you go to one, it's a perfectionist, which to me is what I hear that in there, that everything has to have some level of meeting some high standard. And that's where my head went when you were talking about it. But what I do love about how intentional you are about making your life meet your expectations, making sure that you are showing up in a way that you can feel good about. And almost everything you've talked about is a result of that basic drive, that basic desire to be. And I don't know how you'd fill in the blank. It's a basic desire to do what, do you think, that really drives all of the places you pay attention?
I think it's really to learn and to grow. Like I feel like if I'm not learning, I'm declining. And I don't know if it's like a mortality fear or a mental health fear or just how I'm looked at, maybe. It's probably a combination of all those things that, and that you said expectations. And I was just writing something today about, I was writing a letter to someone as one of those practices. And I wrote about expectations and how they're dangerous, just because they can, particularly if you're trying to live up to someone else's expectations, or you're speculating what they are, it's just such a dangerous place to be in.
Actually, it puts you in that trapped part again, right? When you're trying to live up to it, I can get that out, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, and there's so many levels to that, and there's good parts to it. Like, but it can be such a trap. It definitely can. Like, trying to make your parents proud sounds really good in theory, but it is such a rough trap, because you're never really going to be them, and the world that you're in is so different than the world that they're in, for the most part. That's, you know, and that's true with spouses and. You know, if you're trying to speculate or meet someone's expectation without really communicating and being yourself, then you're not giving them the credit that they deserve in being a partner.
And actually,
you know,
speaking that themselves and representing it and all that wonderful dynamic, right, that comes out when people are really forthcoming with sharing, this is what I think, or this is what I want, or this is what I need, instead of us just trying to do it.
Yeah, that's one of the gifts that my wife's given me, and she's like, that is not my expectation. You were putting something on me that it is not mine. I do not want that. You need that talk about it. So, and there's things like that where I don't, the programming in me on some level is not so easy to see. You know, seeing those things that you can't see, is a real challenge. I think that's kind of part of it too. And the learning is I want to be able to be better than I was the day before. And there's a lot to unpack with that too. I know. I can.
As there always is. It's like anything we say, we're going, okay, there's some work we could do on that one.
Yeah, I could feel you about to say it right then. So, yeah.
That's yeah. funny. Well, listen, I want to give you a few minutes to talk about your book, The Men. And to what I would really love to hear about is a moment when you thought to yourself, I can do this. Like if there was some moment in your writing of it that it started to feel very possible, and what that was like for you.
Yeah, well, as you know, I am a huge fan of Seth Godin.
yes,
and,
I do.
And I don't know, probably many of your listeners know and appreciate Seth too. And so I had been trying to write a book for a long time, and I had written the first chapter over a year and a half before I wrote anything else. And I kind of didn't believe it all that time. And then I got into a group that through Akimbo, which is one of the groups that Seth was connected to, that did writing in community. And I joined it really because I was just enamored with Seth Godin. And then I joined a cohort, and there were three other people who kind of stuck with it and contributed it at an everyday pace. And probably in the first week of seeing them write every day and encourage others and connect with me, I felt I didn't want to let them down by not showing up and writing, and that I could do it by showing up. You know, he says drip by drip. It just takes little steps. You can stack things, small things into something great and something large. And I think that's just what happened. It became that habit. And I would write, 150 words one day, 1,100 the next, 700. And it just kept coming. And I think the end of it was hard to determine. Like, I kind of just wanted to keep writing little pieces and extend it forever. So how to finish it became kind of a struggle. But probably within the first 2 weeks of being in that group, I realized that if I stuck with it, I would actually be able to do it. And then I just wouldn't let go and kept doing it. And it is a credit to the people that were in that group with me. And there's one woman, Christy Casey, who has her own blog and wrote a book, Song of Liren, at the same time. She's a lot of magic, too. She was there, and we both finished and published a book, and she was really helpful to me throughout that process, too.
It's you're really actually talking about the power of community.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something that happens where we work in our own world, or we work inside of our current like norm. And then what happens is if we actually go find a new community or go find a group of people that have a like desire, that are coming from a place of wanting to create something, that all of a sudden it creates this huge shift, like a tectonic plate just moves to the left. Right. And then all of a sudden there's an energy about it. And look at what happened. You actually all of a sudden then just could dive in. Right. You just immersed yourself in the experience. And it, that community made the difference.
It became about more than just me writing. It was, being in that group and participating and, being there for them and reading their things and commenting. And it would be 10 minutes some days, an hour and a half others, but every night, sometime between 10 and at PM and 1 o'clock, once I was done work and all the kid activities were over, I would write. And I just did it.
And you did it, and you published your book. What's it been like since you published it? I just feel like in all of the things that we talk about when we're going inside, there's also that moment of success, right? Where now you're actually out in the world and something's happened that is a culmination of all those minutes spent being with yourself So what was that like?
I think when I got a physical copy that was in my hand, I felt shocked. Mm. Like, I couldn't believe it. And to see my name on it and to be able to hand it to my wife and my family, and like, it's like 300 pages long. I mean, it's a novel. Like, I wrote a novel. And just to kind of even say that still, it kind of reminded me of the first time I picked up my daughter, like when I was in the hospital going to get her in the nursery of the hospital. And I said, I'm here to pick up my daughter. Like, you're like, what did I just say? I did what? That kind of feeling was there. And, you know, there are some moments where there's a few typos in it that I thought were caught. So that part kind of like, I wish I would have, that it would have been perfect. But then I've also gotten text messages, emails from people that are like, they really enjoyed it. That people that haven't read much, it's brought them, you know, reminded of them of some part in their life that they miss, whether it's fly fishing or not. So it's, that part's been really nice. I think for me, the marketing aspect of trying to sell what you wrote is hard. Mm-hmm. But I've done a book reading, which I really, liked. And I'm just glad that some people have read it and enjoyed it. And I'm trying to look into ways where I can do an audiobook, because I know a lot of people do consume books that way. But
yeah,
but the process of putting it together and working with the artist, Emily, who did my cover, and the artwork, she's great. She's also a friend of yours and an author, an artist. So that was really awesome to work with her. And then the designing aspect is kind of cool, you know, just to be able to put something together.
Yeah, I want to just make a mention of this. And that is that I think, you know, the growth and development world is filled, I think, predominantly with a lot of women. And so the idea that you are in your own growth and development process, you're somebody that wants to have you pay attention, you know, right, to your inner world. And you are also putting out a book that's about fly fishing that I think is probably more men. I hope I'm not out of line by saying this. And that in that novel that you bring all this growth and development in through your characters. To me, it's such a statement about how our world is changing and what's now happening for people that we're able to bring groups with us, right? That are reflective of who we are, and that we're having less separation. Like that, a growth conversation now isn't just for women, right? Growth conversation really is about how do we make our lives have the kind of meaning that makes us feel fulfilled when we complete them. So we have about 1 minute left, but I wanted to make sure I mentioned how important I think that is.
Yeah, no, I think the sense of community and giving men a place where they can talk. I think, you know, fishing buddies is kind of a common term, but I think in a lot of places, there's not an ability to talk about things that are serious or mindful. And I just think being in nature kind of facilitates that. And I kind of wanted that as part of the healing that Joe, who's the main character, was going through. So it's really more about healing yourself than fly fishing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that exactly it was, but it was set in such that space. And I do want to just comment, you put plenty of details about the flies and all the the specific stuff that goes into fly fishing for somebody who, you know, eats up that kind of technical detail. I thought you blended those two things really well in your book, where like I could get the relational dynamics, and I also could see that the part about the love of fly fishing was in it as well. And I think that's an amazing feat to have accomplished, and certainly in your first book, you know.
Yeah, thanks. I there's no doubt I'm a nerd, you know, that I'm not getting away from, so.
Well, so here's the thing. I have 1,000 more questions I could talk about. I had other things I would have liked to explore, but I am so glad you brought your thoughts around being a stepfather, because we have so many people that I think listen through the parenting lens. And also the idea that you can be a man, you can be thoughtful, you can notice your what goes on inside, and you can actually put systems in place that support yourself. And I feel like you spoke to all of that, Scott, and I'm so grateful that you were willing to be vulnerable and exposed and express all, you know, those kinds of ideas. We have a half a minute. Is there any last thing you want to say before we leave?
I just really appreciate the time with you and the process. So thank you. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. All right, everyone. Well, have a great week. I'm going to get my wand.
Hold on just a second here. And I'm going to wave it so we
close out the show. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Sam.
All right.
Bye.